Hardware.
Enter a whole new warehouse of wonder with sirenonline.co.uk and Lincoln Inspired.
Quite right, too. Okay, our highs today, 13 degrees centigrade, lows 6 degrees centigrade. Very windy at first, but the winds will slowly ease. There will be sunny intervals, and it'll remain rather cloudy with scattered showers. Now, you heard, obviously, Angela Rippon speaking about her excitement about the upcoming Lincoln Inspired Festival. This is a kind of Lincoln Inspired takeover, semi-takeover of the Midweek Drive Morning Edition. We obviously launched with Paul Money, giving us the science view and the astronomical view of the whole thing. We also regularly featured the delights of Peter Kerr, travel patron, Elliot Morris, music patron, Karen Maitland, of course, history patron. So a week or so, Margaret Dickinson will be joining us as well from that point of view. But now, very exciting, because to go into...
Lincoln Inspired is more than just an arts festival, more than a literary festival, more than a whole set of lifestyle opportunities, and more than what the world has needed for millennia.
To see just how much more Lincoln Inspired can make you... Go to lincolninspired.co.uk and explore the inspiration.
Because we have the creator of forensic archaeologist Ruth Galloway, the one, the only crime patron of Lincoln Inspired, Ellie Griffiths. How are you, Ellie?
I'm fine, thank you.
Excellent. Now, we were speaking, obviously, with Alison Littlewood a wee while ago. She was singing your praises from that point of view. In fact, Ellie, you were the subject of one of the questions in the Lincoln Inspired literary quiz that we ran at the Dog and Bone, in which we actually asked in which university did forensic archaeologist Ruth Galloway actually work. And, of course, you should know the answer to that. It is...
It is a completely made-up university called the University of North Norfolk.
The University of North Norfolk, exactly. But remember, the University of Lincoln in possession was a made-up university then. They might build it and have the official Ellie Griffiths line there.
Wow, wouldn't that be brilliant? Yes, I'd love that. I think I made up the university because I wanted it to kind of be... I didn't want it to be University of East Anglia or somewhere so established, you know. I wanted it to be a little bit... I don't know, a little bit on the outskirts.
Exactly, and I think it works in every sense of the word from that point of view. I also have to point out for people, for a lot of folk who might be a little bit worried, Ellie Griffiths, crime patron. That doesn't necessarily mean you support pump crime or any sort of petty theft or various other rural activities that sort of end up in miscreants, etc. It's just obviously you're an ace crime writer, and obviously forensic archaeology is part and parcel of the whole thing.
I did think that when you were doing your introduction, thinking, yeah. Crime patron.
Yeah.
Does that sound right?
What sort of message is going out there to the listener?
Crime fiction, I think.
I don't know. I suppose you could actually take on board the kind of Mar Baker approach to the life and the universe and various other things. It's a thought. Dying Fall, of course, is one of the novels that the crossing places coming through for that part of you. But let's go back to this whole notion. What are your own thoughts about Lincoln Inspired?
Well, it's just such a wonderful project, I think, and it's so local. It's so much comes from local people. And I've always loved Lincoln, and I've had lots of support from Jill Hart, who is a manager at Lincoln Waterstones, and I've always done lots of events with her. So it was her who first got me interested in Lincoln Inspired. And I just love doing events in Lincoln because there's such a genuine sort of grassroots love for the arts, and... So I really did want to be involved. I was actually at a festival in Harrogate, big crime writers festival, and suddenly some people started saying, "Hi, Ellie," and it was a whole group of people from Lincoln, and I really felt like I was back home. So even though I don't live in Lincoln, I kind of feel a bit of an honorary resident, and so I was really happy to be involved.
And we're delighted that you're part of that whole process. Angela Rippon was delighted to say that, you know, it thrives and does a whole range of things, etc. Let's introduce you to Katie Grimason. Katie, any thoughts or questions for Ellie?
You have, like, an alias name, don't you? Like, Ruth.
It confused me. There was I writing an email to one person thinking, I just do that, and then I thought, AK, oh, yeah, oh, I felt like a lemon, Ellie, I can tell you. I thought, whoa, do your research. What's happening here?
Well, the thing is that my real name is Domenica De Rosa, which sounds completely made up. So it's really strange, isn't it? Because my pseudonym is quite an ordinary name, Ellie Griffiths. And my real name just sounds, you know, like a pseudonym, I suppose.
You could have always done a sort of P.D. James and done a D. De Rosa, perhaps.
I did want to be E. Griffiths, actually, at first, but it's that my publishers decided that I would be Ellie.
Well, it all works well, and at the end of the day, you've got to keep those publishers happy. Very critical.
Yes, definitely. And it's my grandmother's name. My grandmother was Eleanor Griffiths, so I'm quite happy to be using her name, really. And I just think Domenica De Rosa is not a very crimey name, really, is it?
It does sound slightly more rom-com and kind of historical romance, it has to be said. But, you know, at the end of the day, you know, never judge a book by the title of the author, to paraphrase a horror routine. Now, when we talk about forensic fiction, the first thing that springs to my mind is... which, of course, is the theme to NCIS, one of my guilty pleasures in terms of David McCallum and Ducky and a whole range of folk there. Mark Harmon, of course, in there, and Michael Weatherly, adding a whole new level of cool to solving crimes, I find. I'm just sort of thinking, obviously, that's an American take, and obviously CSI, when we talk about forensics and so on, clearly in Britain we've got a well-worn history going back to Cracker and even before then of people getting involved with this whole area. What was it about the whole crime fiction area and that forensic archaeology, of course, which appeals to your good self?
Well, for me, it was definitely the archaeology rather than forensic, I have to say. I mean, there are such people as forensic archaeologists, and they do help the police, especially when a body's been buried and they sort of find out how long it's been in the ground and that sort of thing. But it was really the archaeology, and that's where I wanted to set my books, you know, around this area, you know, around sort of East Anglia, Norfolk area, because there's so much archaeology. There's literally layers and layers down there, and I hoped, you know, I'd kind of avoid the Midsummer Murders trap, you know, where one area becomes unfeasibly full of bodies.
Exactly. It's like Oxford. You can actually sort of not step past Oxford without sort of people dying.
Oh, no. But the fact is that Norfolk is full of bodies. It's just some of them have been buried for hundreds of years.
Precisely.
So it was definitely the archaeology, really, more than the forensic, that it did.
I love the kind of biography we've got here of Ruth Galloway. When Ruth was 10, her parents found God. That's nice, isn't it? You just saw that they became born again and embarked on an enthusiastic career of going to church and praying for people, especially for Ruth, for whom God remained resolutely hidden. Ruth took refuge in her books and, after excellent A-levels, went to University College London to study archaeology. She graduated with a first and went on to do an MA at UCL. By the way, that wasn't the Almighty entering the studio. It's just Katie knocking the microphone. It's all right. It happens. You know, you don't know what happens with this whole thing. The thing I appreciate about that is you've provided via the website and obviously via the text as well quite a fascinating backstory for the whole essence of Ruth Galloway, which is often sort of filled in on that basis. Was that kind of conscious decision when you were writing and creating the character to actually provide them with a wealth of biography?
I do find that helps when you're writing a character, because even if those bits never come into the books, it's somehow useful if you know them, really. And then I must admit, I put them on the website to make sure that I never forgot them, because, you know, I'm now six books into the series. And people do say to me, oh, wasn't Ruth, you know, at UCL, didn't she do this? And I have to make sure that I know exactly what she
Ellie,
was doing
Ellie,
when.
Quite,
you know?
Quite simple response to that. Alternate dimensions and what-if tales. Are, you say, if anybody actually queries you, this was set in another universe. It's quite okay. Use a quantum mechanical argument. That's my
advice. A really good argument, and I might well use that.
There you go. That's fine. Fiend. Questions or thoughts for yourself?
Yeah, I was wondering, as a crime writer, what are your examples or what crime authors you really like?
Oh, right. Well, I'm actually...
You can say Alison Littlewood if you wish. I'm just
Alison Littlewood.
Or David Mark.
But I'm actually really into Victorian writers, and my favourite writer, who I think can claim to be the first crime writer, is Wilkie Collins. So... he's probably my favourite writer of all time, and I think The Moonstone's one of the greatest crime books ever. But I also really like C.J. Sampson. I like Kate Atkinson, whether she's writing crime or not. Also Ian Rankin, Val McDermott. So, you know, I do like quite a lot of modern writers as well.
And what are you most looking forward to at Lincoln Inspired 2013?
Oh, well, I'm looking forward to trying to go to quite a few of the events, actually, but I'm particularly looking forward to I'm doing a crime panel, which also sounds a little bit dodgy.
2 p.m. to 3:30, everything you ever wanted to know about how to get away with the perfect murder. No, yes. Are you kidding?
Yes, with David Mark and with Alison as well, isn't it?
Absolutely. So, yes.
I'm really looking forward to that.
A panel discussion on the challenges of writing one of fiction's most popular genres. Of course, this is the crucial thing. It's sponsored by Quirkus Books, of course. But it is one of those zones where crime fiction, historical romance, historical... You know, it's one of those generic forms which does seem to almost grow like Topsy, really. You think, surely there can't be another take on the whole field.
Yes. Yes, I mean, I do think crime pays in a way, and I think the fact is there is a very enthusiastic crime community. Again, that sounds a bit dodgy, but I think it's actually one of the few areas where young writers and new writers are coming in all the time, and they're very much supported by the established writers. So I think that's probably why crime is so vibrant. I have to say I was a bit disappointed to see no crime writers on the Granta Young Novelist list, because there are a lot, like David Mark, you know, lots of really great young writers coming on in crime at the moment.
And you mentioned, of course, the Harrogate Festival, which is something we've always intended to actually cover in previous years, so one of these days we must check. Ed, thoughts from yourself?
Yes, good morning to you, Ellie.
Hello.
And I'm looking forward very much to Mike Panett's session on the 9th of May, the Thursday.
He's your warm-up act, Ellie. Don't worry about him. He's a nice chap. He's from Yorkshire, talks about Yorkshire quite a lot, and
excellent.
We'll be talking about a Yorkshire policeman's lot.
And that's quite interesting, isn't it? Because that'll be real.
Yes. Well, it is always great to talk to real policemen, and sometimes the things that they've seen and are more than anything you could ever imagine, really. So I am really looking forward to that. Even though my new book, Dying Fall, is set in Lancashire, so I hope you won't be against it. You know, Yorkshire, Lancashire.
Don't worry. I mean, I've had lots of words with Mike, and he's a nice chap, but sometimes you just have to say, Mike, sorry, we're just going to have to stop you now. Enough, you know, enough already. just move on from that. It is a fantastic day, of course, because May the 9th, Reflections on Rural Life, kicks off at the Lincoln Drill Hall at the room upstairs with Margaret Dickinson in conversation with Valerie Wood. Then, of course, Lincoln Drill Hall, Yorkshire Policeman's Lot. And then you're actually in the Lincoln Central Library community room, Crime in the Countryside. That's between 2 p.m. and 3:30. Following your good self, of course, Simon Scarrow will be in conversation with another one of our good friends, indeed also fellow co-patrons of Lincoln Inspired. That will be the fabulous Karen Maitland.
Yes, that's going to be great, I think.
History
really
patron. And any areas of things that you're looking towards which you think, yes, actually, I'd quite like to check that one out. For instance, 50 Years of Doctor Who, Terence Dix, Graham Harper, Richard Franklin and a Dalek.
Yes, and I've heard all about the Dalek. Yes, there's lots of things that I'd like to see, actually. I'm going to stay for a few days and try and see a few things.
That's what we like to hear. You know, a patron who takes their duties seriously. And
yes,
with
well, you know.
It's critical. A reminder that if you want to find out more about Ellie's fabulous work, etc., elliegriffiths.co.uk. That's elliegriffiths.co.uk. Ellie, two final questions. Have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link on this, your Midweek Drive Morning Edition debut?
Yes, it's been great. I've been looking forward to it, and it's great. Lovely to think that I'm speaking to you there in Lincoln.
And it's strange and bizarre. So can we look forward to hopefully connecting with you again as the sort of post-festival stuff continues and keeping us updated about life, the universe, and all those other exciting things?
Of course, and in fact, the book that I'm working at the moment, which will be number 6, was inspired by something that happened to me in Lincoln. So I hope to talk to you more about that when that comes out.
See, it just fits into every sense of the word. It's truly magical in every sense. A round of applause, please, for Ellie Griffiths. And a round of applause for Danica as well. Sorry, a double round of applause there. It's very, very peculiar.
Thank you very much.
The Last Century. Stories Bazaar and David Van Day, otherwise known as the duo that were Dollar, once they'd actually left Guys and Dolls with Love's Got a Hold of Me. Okay, it's the Lincoln-inspired mini takeover of the Midweek Drive Morning Edition, which means it's only right that we should actually feature one of our regular American correspondents saying,
Lincoln-inspired is more than just an arts festival, more than a literary festival, more than a whole set of lifestyle opportunities, and more than what the world has needed for a millennia. To see just how much more Lincoln Inspired can make you, go to lincolninspired.co.uk and explore the inspiration.
Exactly. And, of course, the one thing we didn't add to that, which possibly in retrospect we should have actually said, Lincoln Inspired is one of those areas where you can find the truly wonderful legend that actually is Leanne Taylor. How are you, Leanne?
Good morning. I'm very well. Thank you very much.
Excellent. So, Leanne, you're connected with Storybook Days. Share with us your involvement with the festival, how it sort of came on board and all the rest of the marvellous things from the whole thing.
Yes, well, Storybook Days is a Lincoln-based company. We're based in Necklam, actually, so not far away. And we've been going for 3 years. We're really excited when we were approached by Sarah to look at something for the Inspired Festival. And obviously, with it being 50 years of celebration of Morris Sendak, then Where the Wild Things seemed the perfect opportunity, really, to have a workshop based on that wonderful book.
Absolutely, and great movie as well. Of course, often sort of neglected when people say, oh, it's 50 years of Doctor Who. Yes, but, you know, you've got 50 years of other celebrations as well from that point of view. Where the Wild Things Are. Ed, are you around when you saw this? Or have you seen Where the Wild Things Are? Is this, you know, Maurice Sendak's children's classic published 50 years ago? Max's magical journey from his bedroom to a world inhabited by jungle creatures? That sounds like the University of Lincoln, of course.
I don't remember this, but I'm
well,
ready to be,
treat.
To be educated by the rumpus dance and cupcake and mask making.
The rumpus dance, yeah. The cupcake and mask making. I mean, Katie, I can tell you are particularly interested in the rumpus dance. Leanne, will you be choreographing the rumpus dance? Or, tragically, I look at this, suitable for children aged 3 to 5. I'm just over that. You know, astonishingly. Can't make it. Parents are free, but needs to book a space. Quite rightly so. What's going to be happening at Lincoln Drill Hall, the room upstairs, in this 1 hour, 3,600 seconds of Storybook Days and Where the Wild Things Are?
Yes, and obviously it is only 1 hour, but we hope to bring the book alive in that hour and immerse the young people really in the story. To begin with, we'll be telling the story and the young people will be sort of the characters in the story really. So we begin by basically getting them to go to bed, as happens in the story. They've been naughty and they're sent to bed. And we have a music soundtrack that kind of creates the atmosphere of the book. And then we take them on a journey across the sea to the land where the wild things live. And then we introduce them to the wild thing and they take on the part of Max and the wild things. And really just using their imaginations to kind of fully immerse them in all the wonderful things of the book. And then after that, we'll be, like you say, we'll be doing a wild rumpus dance, which will be kind of, will come from the children and their parents, but also sort of led by us. And again, with sort of a soundtrack to kind of encourage them to explore different movements. Which hopefully will work really successfully.
The movie, of course, directed by Spack Johns, back in 2009. I think a few people were surprised by the choice of director. It's quite a dark tale, really. I mean, you know, bearing in mind, as you say, the first thing is the child is sent to bed for being disobedient. It's got various morals in the story about where one finds friendship and how one connects from that point of view. What appeals to it from your own perspective?
I mean, in terms of, obviously, Storybook Days, we use the book, and we do run longer workshops, and I'm sure that if we did a full day of this, we would kind of show clips from the film.
Yeah.
But for me, I think the illustrations in the book are just beautiful. It's a stunning book to look at. And I think the character of Max is just really interesting. So we kind of, we enjoy this workshop because you can kind of look at Max's role and also obviously kind of have some fun with the wild things, really. And I think children like that opportunity to kind of be wild but within a controlled environment, which is always good fun.
University academics have the same thing, really. Be wild but within a controlled environment. Katie, thoughts from yourself? Any questions?
Well, I do remember Where the Wild Things Are. Oh. It takes me back to my days at primary school.
Yeah, yeah, see, this is it. I would have said it was very much a precursor to things like the Gruffalo. Would you say that was a fair comment, Leanne? Or is that, would you say, no, the Gruffalo is completely different? It's a different zone entirely.
I think there are some comparisons. I mean, I think the writing for the Gruffalo is obviously very different and it has very much of its own style, really. But no, I mean, we enjoy both, and we do both books, actually. We look at the Gruffalo as well as Where the Wild Things Are. So, yeah, anything that's got kind of got animals in it, we like, really.
So Winnie the Pooh possible sort of areas from that perspective?
We've done Winnie the Pooh once, yeah. We did do that one, which is a nice book. So it worked well.
I'm thinking, Leanne, really, we should have the Storybook Days Festival. You know, it's the next thing, just actually non-stop scenario, but actually have some sort of Storybook Days for over-18s. Not in a kind of adult sense, but just a word. Fien, thoughts for yourself?
Yeah, I was wondering, are you going to any of the other events at the festival? Are you interested in...
Yes, I'm sure we will be. I must admit, I need to get my diary sorted. Now the holidays have been over and the children are back to school, this week is my week to kind of get on top of everything else, really. So, yes, we will be going to other things, definitely. And I have a young family myself, so they'll certainly be coming along to lots of things with us. So, it'll be good.
You said those immortal words. You were very excited when Sarah Bullimore approached you. A lot of people do. It's just the way she is, basically. but in terms of that, clearly this festival has got a whole range of things. From that point of view, what from your own perspective is at the heart of Lincoln Inspired? I mean, we've heard from an awful lot of folk this morning, and indeed in previous podcasts, you can have a listen to them on southsidebroadcasting.podbean.com under the Lincoln Inspired banner. What is it that kind of makes this a little bit more special than other festivals?
I think for me it's kind of the bringing together of all the different genres is really exciting. And also all the different partners and supporters who are on board. I think it kind of embeds it really in the community of Lincoln more. And hopefully it means that, you know, a lot more people will come, people will be excited about it, and it will become something that people see as a tradition. So hopefully we'll be creating a new tradition that year on year people sort of are anticipating and looking forward to, which I think is really exciting for the city.
A win-win situation, you see, on message and sorted through. Leanne, it's been fabulous just sharing a few words with your good self today. Have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic chat with us on this, your debut for the Midweek Drive Morning Edition?
It's been wonderful, yes. Thank you ever so much for inviting me on. I appreciate it.
So the next question is, can we look forward to connecting with you again in the very near future?
You certainly may, yes. With pleasure.
There we are, Leanne Taylor, Willax the Returner. I was actually looking for the Western Swing Authority there, because obviously that was Cameron Tilbury's choice from last night. It hasn't actually emerged. It seems to be hiding away in its own particular zone, really. But you know, clearly we'll just have to wait and hold fire from that point of view.
Patsy Cline then, anywhere?
Patsy Cline, of course. Linda Ronstadt was also said to be a key thing. No, we're going to bring in the Partridge Family.
Every night, a different town.
You would say life was like a one-night stand. Anyway, life continues. Okay, William Sitwell, not at present with us, but we are going to try and reach him live now. Of course, three words that wrapped up William's piece last week. The memorable, sad, but inevitable. That was the whole thing. I'll say it again. Sad, but inevitable. So we'll just see whether he does actually connect with us now, whether it goes live, or whether we'll just actually say about what he was doing in Scarborough recently and how we can actually look at these Scarborough-based things and see what's happening with respect to that. And obviously leave a voicemail message and see how things work through. Or maybe the phone will just ring.
Good morning, Silent FM. How are you?
Oh, fantastic.
In gourmet criticism and foodie delights. And the author of A History of Food in 100 Recipes. Quite clearly a question of quality personified. It's William Sitwell on the Midweek Drive Morning Edition.
Yeah, you see, it's not sad, it's not inevitable, it's there, he's back with us in every sense of the word. After surviving Scarborough, yes, Sitwell in Scarborough, SIS, he has actually survived it. And how did it go, William? Because we've been talking obviously about the upcoming Lincoln-inspired festival. Did you enjoy Scarborough? More importantly, did the Scarborough folk look after you?
They did, yes. By the way, it's a bit windy where I am.
Yeah, we've noticed as well. It's. I thought I was in Kansas earlier today, but then I found myself looking at the Munchkins. But I won't go down on that line because it could cause offence. Anyway, let's move on.
Scarborough, what a beautiful place. It looked a bit sad the day I was. It was very misty, but I managed to sleep around some of the old houses where my family used to live.
Well, indeed, the Sitwell Society were there. I'm actually looking at some of the... you can actually listen to the talk as well there. And I can see some of the slides there, which could almost be sketches of a Midweek Drive team of co-presenters there. That's wonderful. Extraordinary, you know?
Yes.
We can identify ourselves without, obviously, the cigar-smoking chap. But still, that's the important side of things from that point of view. So is this true, then, that the Sitwells actually have a Yorkshire background?
Well, yeah, absolutely. I'm on my bicycle, by the way, if you're wondering what's happening. My great-grandfather was raised in the sort of early part of his childhood in Scarborough, and he lived on the Crescent in a house called Wood End, and he married the girl next door, a woman called Ida Lonsborough. She was the daughter of the Earl of Lonsborough. So they met on the Crescent.
We're actually looking at Lady Ida Sitwell now. So there we are. That's the she gave the letter. It's very glamorous. Yes, very
well poised.
Yeah. That's right. She was my great grandmother, who was sent to prison in 1913 for fraud. But let's not talk about that.
No, let's not. You know, I know we've had a crime specialist on today, but, you know, I tell you, if you provide that information, next time Rosie Langhorne's on, oh, she'll sort of give you jip on that basis. She hasn't forgotten you last week, or forgiven you, I have to say, William, for saying, well, thank God for music videos. That was 5 years of the girl's career you trashed in that statement.
grief.
Well, it's what you employ me for, to outrage the listener.
life continues. Brilliant stuff. And again, the slides are up there from that point of view. I just think, Ed, you know, surely this has to be part of Lincoln Inspired 2014. You know, the Sitwell tale of sort of Yorkshire and Lincolnshire, definite mileage there. We're going to be talking about wine tasting, and we have Jeff Adams, who's a premier wine writer. I don't know if you've encountered Jeff in previous times. He's an award-winning wine writer who'll be sampling a selection from the extensive range of wines on offer at the Lincoln Hotel on Friday, May the 10th. I think he's just going to be sampling them, and that's it, really. He'll probably say, that's very nice, and that's okay too. What are your views on wine tasting as a culinary guru, William? Is it a case of, do you savour the wine? Do you sometimes feel people get a bit carried away about their descriptions of wines and so on?
Well, I mean, it's a very, very great skill. I mean, firstly, great wine writers, I think they have to have a sort of extraordinary mathematical brain. I mean, if you think about the great wine writers, people like Tim Atkins and so on, or Andrew Jefford, they go to Burgundy and they'll taste, you know, 400 wines in a day. And they have a brain that enables them to actually lodge that information in their system and then to think about it and to be able to then write notes and describe flavour notes and so on. So you have to have a sort of an extraordinary, clever and ordered mind to be someone who is actually a very, very skilled wine writer and taster. I think that, you know, the people who've become famous over the years for writing about wine, people like Judy Gould, and became famous because of the sort of being attacked by dustbin vans, famous because of the sort of fruity language that they've used. But I think that one of the difficulties that wine writers have is communicating what is pretty complicated knowledge to the average punter who thinks they know what they like, wants some general advice to sort of shift their wine drinking forward. But they can't only take on a certain amount of information. So, you know, good wine writing is a great skill in terms of tasting. Again, you know, I think you have to sort of say what you think, not go too crazy, and spit.
Spitting, I think, is always crucial to the whole thing, you know, and preferably into some container, not just spitting out on the floor, because I think that's dreadful. No.
Spittoon.
I think they're called spittoons.
Exactly. Yeah, precisely. It's like an old Western. Why, ye young pups, I remember when, bing, you know. Sadly, we don't have a spittoon in the studio. Perhaps I should consider suggesting that. Katie Grimerson, are you a wine person, or is it?
No way.
No.
Not on a night out, but I do like a nice glass of red with a meal.
You see, a nice glass of red with a meal. I mean, this is where...
With ice?
With ice.
Yeah, not at room temperature, though.
On the rocks, so to speak. Yeah. Ed?
Yeah, I've never understood the fine food and fine wine at the same time. I can have fine food and fine wine, but I just wouldn't do it at the same time. Anyone else with me on that?
No, not at all.
So, fiend from...
That's the whole point. What an extraordinary say.
I know, but so I just...
Who is this strange guest of yours on the show today?
I'm just trying to be controversial, that's it.
Ed Wellman, note, deranged at times. There we are, just a little note for the whole thing from that. Fien, you were surprised at Ed's viewpoint on that.
The taste of wine is so amazing. Why would one want to ruin that with good food and vice versa?
It's not ruined.
Well,
come on then.
Yeah, I mean, the whole point is that good wine brings out interesting flavours in food and vice versa. You'll find that there are wines that match food so beautifully that the ensemble produces an even greater piece of music. Yeah. I mean, it's like saying, why bother having a horn in a large orchestra? You know, if you've got plenty of violins, it's because it can give it a little bit of extra horniness.
Nice phrase.
I'll try harder, William.
That's going to get the Sunday Express on the line straight away. I can believe that. You know, William Sitwell wants extra horniness. Never mind. We'll carry on regardless. Fien, any other questions you want to put to William about life, the universe, and, of course, doing a telephone conversation whilst riding a bike as well?
Do you favour red or white wine?
I think that translates from the Belgium, do you favour red or white?
I think it depends on where you are and what you feel like. I mean, my preferred tipple about 7 in the evening is probably a nice sort of fresh Viognier. But if I'm having a big haunch of beef, you know, I'd like some red. If I want to have the mutt, but likewise, I'm not averse to drinking red wine with fish, if I think it's appropriate. So it depends on my mood. The great thing is the wine world is so diverse huge and interesting that, you know, I think you just keep experimenting. And, you know, there's more to a world of wine than red and white, obviously. I mean, you know, there's rosé, of course.
William, I know that you're sort of tight and you're... Where exactly are you cycling, by the way?
Well, I've now got off my bike and I'm in Portland Road in London. I'm going to have to run into an office.
Because I'm just thinking, if you have a few seconds, Jeff Adams is literally is coming into the studio. We could probably just take this as a little handover, really, from sort of culinary delights to Jeff. I don't know if you've ever encountered Jeff before, but he's an award-winning wine writer. Good morning, Jeff. How are you?
Oh, good morning. Good morning, all.
Sit yourself down. I noticed you've got a cup of coffee in your hand there, as opposed to wine, which is all great. We have the legend that is William Sitwell, of course, editor of Waitrose Food, and indeed author of A History of Food in 100 Recipes. And we just wanted to sort of have this opportunity. I mean, William's been rightly saying that wine tasting is a phenomenal skill. Over 400 wines could be tasted in the same day. You go off, you have to remember all sorts of things, etc. From your own perspective, Jeff, is this true, or would you just say, no, I just like wine?
Well, I heard some of that. 400 wines in a day, absolutely true. When I was writing my book or doing the research for writing my book about Greek wines, I was hitting not quite 400, but getting close a day to try and get enough access to material, enough tasting notes to be able to actually complete the book.
The sacrifice is phenomenal. William, any questions for Jeff, very briefly?
No, but I'm very interested that you've written a book about Greek wine, because a lot of people disparage Greek wine. I once put an event on at the in London, comparing Greek wine to the rest of the world. I had 300 people in the audience, and they wouldn't have thought for a moment they would have voted Greek wine, and Greek wine won the day. The Greeks obviously been making wine for longer than a lot of other people, and there's the most fantastic indigenous grapes they have over there. Santorini produces, I think, some of the nicest white wines. There's wonderful wines you can get on the slopes of Mount Olympus, Mavrodaphne, and all the rest of it, and, you know, so, yeah, I'm glad that you're a man after my own heart. Although I would say I still love Retsina.
Retsina is can be underrated. It's but I try not to classify it as wine per se. I think it's a bit of an offshoot from wine, because of course they add the resin to it, so they do doctor it. But interesting what you have to say about Santorini. I have a very good friend who produces on Santorini, Heridimos Hatzidakis.
I know him. He's a good man. I've been to his winery. And he has this edit. And what's wonderful is you drive past that winery and you would never think for a moment that those little clusters of vines growing as if they're weaving baskets will actually yield Hatzidakis' wine. And I think it's some of the most delicious white wine in the world. I think it's magnificent stuff. It's minerally. You can taste the salts from the early morning dew. And it's fantastic. He's a great man, isn't he?
I have actually hailed him as the finest winemaker, or the most talented winemaker in Greece. And what he does with Assyrtiko, he not only makes the bone dry version of the Santorini Assyrtiko wine, but he also makes the most wonderful sweet wine as well. Have you actually been down into his winery? It's underground, and all he has. Yeah. As a roof, of course, is it's a sort of a metal corrugated iron roof. You wouldn't even hardly know that it was his winery down there.
I've been in there and I've watched his mother with a hairdryer putting labels onto bottles, and I've drunk straight out of those taps as they're bottling on bottling day. Delicious.
That's right. Absolutely amazing. You wouldn't think one of the finest wines in Greece comes out of this hole in the ground. Incredible.
I feel Jeff and William were almost intruding on a moment here. But, you know, time has to go on its own way. Katie Grimmison, last two questions for William, please.
William, have you had an interesting telephonic link with us today?
Fantastic. A meeting of mine.
There we are, you see. I thought it would have been last week with Legs and Co, but this bonding, you know, I thought the deranged individual, once again, going well into all sorts of other areas. Let's move on. The next question, Katie, is...
And can we look forward to connecting with you again next week?
You can.
There we are. William Sitwell will return. So we started off the programme with Paul Money, of course, science patron for Lincoln Inspired, moved on to Richard Fitzwilliams, as a royal correspondent, needless to say. Angela Rippon updated us on her views and reflections on the importance of festivals to not just local economies, but the world in general. Ellie Griffiths, Lincoln Inspired crime patron, gave us some thoughts on Ruth Galloway, the forensic archaeologist. Leanne Taylor, of course, taking us through the more childish views of children and importance, etc. Fiend Heen is leaving us for the moment. Bye-bye, Fiend.
There we are,
waving. She's waving. And William Sitwell, of course, back with us after his wonderful time at the Scarborough Festival. But now we have a chance to formally introduce a gentleman who will be taking centre stage at 6 p.m. on the exciting world of Friday, May the 10th at the Lincoln Hotel. Yes, wine tasting with Jeff Adams. Good morning, Jeff. Are you well?
Good morning, Alex and everybody. Am I well? Well, there's a question. I'm having coffee to make sure I remain good. Well if...
Fantastic. Award-winning wine writer, a whole range of facts that you shared with William and the listener, of course, about the work you do with, obviously, books and writing, that whole thing. Was this something you'd always intended to do? Was it when the careers advisor called you in as a young man and said, what are you going to do then with your life, Jeff? You know, what are you going to say? I want to drink.
Well, I certainly did my share of drinking as a young man.
Right.
However, no, it wasn't really in my life plans. I fell into it as one does by pure chance accident. I was always keen on tasting wine. My father used to let me taste wine with him when I was 14. So from 14 years onwards, I've been a wine taster, but it was always really a hobby until a chance appeared for me in, I think it was about 1990 or so, something like that. Maybe earlier, can't remember.
Last century, obviously.
Yes, definitely last century. The Lincolnshire Echo contacted me as somebody who knew a little bit about wine because I was chairman of the Lincoln Wine Society at that point and asked me if I could write a little column for them. And that led on to me writing a book and, in short... Once my book was published, my career in that took off.
Look back. I just thought how very European of your father to actually introduce you to one when you were 14, because that's often regarded as one of the reasons why certain European countries are more civilized than we are in Britain, where basically it's a case of getting as tanked up as possible and then completely immobile as soon as you can, which is not the best way forward. Katie, you were talking about obviously liking red every so often, cold red or with ice, etc. Jeff, how educational is this event going to be? I mean, can somebody like Katie or Ed, myself, who have very limited sort of awareness of wine, engage with this? Or is it just a case of we're just going to watch you drink lots of wine, effectively?
No. It's going to be everybody's going to get a taster of wine that evening. If I'm not mistaken, there are going to be 8 different wines to taste for everybody to taste. The Lincoln Hotel are donating the wine for the night, and however many people we get there, the appropriate number of bottles will be open, and everybody will get a taste of 8 different wines with me chatting about them and mutual discussion, I think, as well.
Early booking, of course, advised. Your talks usually sell out. Make sure you book a taxi home or at least get a designated driver. Ed.
Yeah, to pick up on what Katie was saying, she mentioned that she liked red wine with an ice cube in. Now, was the whole thing of red wine being at
room
temperature?
He's almost fallen off his chair there for a moment.
I prefer red wine when it's cold. I find that red wine at room temperature is a bit...
It's quite sizzly.
Chewy. And yeah. So are we right to want it a bit colder, maybe?
Well, there are certain red wines that you can drink cold naturally, and they are served cold in their home regions. For example, a light Beaujolais. Is best served cold, in actual fact. So wines that are unoaked just simple wines, unoaked, light, easy drinking wines, can often and are often best served cold. However, if you are to serve some of the more delicate, oaked, complex red wines cold, then you will lose all those calories. You see, so unfortunately, those wines, if you want to get the best out of them, need to be served not at room temperature, because if you're sitting in a room that is 30 degrees hot, then that is the wrong temperature to drink wine. So you drink it at around, I think it's about 18 degrees, 17 degrees. And that's the best temperature to get all the maximum characteristics from delicate and complex wines.
Mm. And I think that you've hit the nail on the head there, because I think people will set their thermostats probably these days a bit higher than that. I know we're told to take it down again, but I think I certainly have to sort of put mine to 21, 22 to get it bearable. The room temperature, that is.
Ah, yes, yeah.
So there, you've answered my question, thank you.
Okay.
It's critical stuff, actually, in terms of the whole system. I mean, clearly, Jeff, this is a science. We start off with the science of astronomy. Science of wine tasting is something that actually connects with that. And we were talking about Jilly Gould and, obviously, the flowery language that's actually used to that. That's got kind of, it's got its fans, it's got its people who actually say this is just poseur territory. What are your own views on that? Do you actually like to keep it real, keep it Lincolnshire?
I tend to keep it real because, you know, I know Jilly Gould and she's a wonderful lady. And what she did, along with Oz Clark on television, was to popularise wine. That's the thing, and she did it through her flowery language. And there is nothing wrong with that, because these are characteristics in wines that you can look for, and it's fun to do. However, if you don't want to problematise wines too much, you can keep it fairly simple and very enjoyable.
Exploding phones all over the place, really, from this point of view. Don't worry, it's not your phone. Don't worry about the whole thing. We'll just literally actually press a button and it'll go.
Well, I'm going to turn mine off anyway.
It's extraordinary. You know, sometimes you think, what's going on with life, the universe, paradise? I'll tell you what, we'll press this button here.
Lincoln Inspired is more than just an arts festival, more than a literary festival, more than a whole set of lifestyle opportunities, and more than what the world has needed for millennia.
To see just how much more Lincoln Inspired can make you, go to lincolninspired.co.uk and explore the inspiration.
So, Jeff, you're part of the festival, a very critical part, obviously, as we said on Friday, May the 10th. What are you most looking forward to with respect to Lincoln Inspired 2013?
Goodness me, there's a question. I'm going to go to as many of the
events,
thank you, right. as I can. Obviously, I'm you know, one's very busy, so one can't make them all, but I think one or two of the book events I'm going to try and go to. If there are any plays on, are there some plays on? I haven't.
We don't actually have plays as such, but we do have some wonderful audio plays. The War of the Worlds, of course, the Lincoln Performing Arts Centre, the Mighty Bush is there from that perspective. And ironically, something which the Midweek Drive team will be attending is a fabulous event that takes place on Wednesday, May the 8th, which is the extraordinary show Titania, which reimagines Shakespeare's A Midsummer Night's Dream as a modern-day musical cabaret performed and created by renowned international theatre practitioner Anna Helena McLean. An intoxicating performance promising an engaging, funny, sensual experience. Thank you. Also, you're more than welcome to join us for the celebration of 50 years of Doctor Who as well. Feel free to do that. Yeah, Terrence Dicks. I don't know, are you a Doctor Who person?
Not really, no.
I'm not Doctor Who. It's all right. It's
War of the Worlds, absolutely. Really? Right. I shall try very, very hard to get to that one, I think.
No one would have believed the whole thing sort of opens up in its own way. Western Swing Authority, this was Cameron Tilbury's musical selection from last night. I got a feeling.